1, Reel 51. You were saying that you were running across the big field.
And I heard the hounds behind. And I looked and there they were. The whole field was coming after me. And so they'd only given me two or three minutes, I think. And I was in a bit of a panic because I had this scent on me.
Yes.
And I thought, my word, the hounds have hold of me, they're going to pull me to pieces. Mm. So I put on the spur over a hedge and I got the sack and threw it on the top of a hedge and I ran on away sort of to a tree to keep out of the hounds until the field came up. And of course the hounds were all right, they didn't. And I said, well, you didn't give me 20 minutes. As I asked you, that you gave me 2 minutes. I'd only done 500 yards. You know, so I'm sorry, you know. So they all had to sort of hover around until I could get another start to continue the complete drag. But it'd be good fun.
What sort of tanks did the 4th Hussars have?
Yeah, what would they be now?
Did they have Shermans or Cromwells?
They weren't Cromwell. What's the next British heavy tank that they had?
Churchill was a heavy tank,
no,
but that's infantry support. Comet?
Might well have been a Comet. Was there one bigger than a Comet?
I think the Comet, and then was there a thing called the Conqueror?
No, the Conqueror didn't come out until 53. Mm. It could have been a Comet then. Because I didn't have much to do then.
You didn't?
No, I only dealt with my armed cars.
And your armed cars were Greyhounds?
Greyhounds.
What were they like? Tell me about those.
They were six wheel. They had a 37mm gun.
Which is a... 37mm, it was bigger than the 2-pounder.
Round about, there wasn't much between them. Really. And the Browning machine gun. I liked them. And say we had our crews well trained.
How many in the crew of a Greyhound?
Three.
So it was the same as you've been used to.
Yeah. Did we have a radio somewhere separate? There might have been four, but I think there was only three, if I can remember right. And my job was I did all the sort of recce around the area and training all wherever I could, and then I was given the job to escort the general of 6th Armoured Div. It was first time I did, I think I came 6th as the Rhino badge. And I was given the job to escort him.
Who's he?
Canadian General. I have the name just now. And he used to go around the border at the time in the Tito Troubles was on. I'm talking about early 46. So they were expecting troubles, and Gorizia used to be a hot spot. But there was always trouble, a grenade would be thrown or something, because I used to have to whip out with my troop, you know, and sort of swan around and make it look as though it was a show of force or anything.
How many were there in your troop? How many cars?
Three.
So you've got three Greyhounds, and you said they were fast. What sort of speed could they make?
45, 50. They were sleek, and they were a good fast one. On the roads, I'm talking about.
Yeah. What about the armour on them?
Much the same as a Daimler, I think. But they were lower silhouette than a Daimler, they were... You could corner better with them than you could with the Daimler, because they're a little bit too weighty on the top. Although they had a smallish turret, but they were a nice armored car.
Was there any great advantage in having 6 wheels rather than four? What difference
really.
Does that make?
I don't know. Probably it might have made a difference cross country.
Mm.
But I never used them on cross country because that area wasn't suitable for work.
Mm. What sort? I mean, you said you were going out on normal troop training. What sort of thing were you doing with them when you took them out every day?
Camouflage, approach. You know, each of you, the armour guards, taking a turn to approach, say, a bridge, and what you would do after taking the bridge, how you would sort of fan out to protect the bridge. Either one side or the other.
Mm.
All different map reading exercises, anything that they would have to come up with, you know, in war.
When you got there, were the soldiers men who'd had experience of fighting?
No.
They were new.
They were all new recruits, very little experience. So they were good for training.
Were they all right? Did you get on? Did you get a grip of all of them?
Oh, yes, they were all very good and all very keen, especially you know when they were allowed to do the other man's job. Because normally in a troop, you don't get the chance of that in a tank.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the tank driver does the driving, you do the gunning, and that sort of thing. But this, in this, I insisted that everyone did the other man's job,
mm-hmm.
and so that they were efficient in. Whatever, if anything happened to one of them, the other one could take over, which was good.
Were you doing only troop training, or did you ever go out with the squadron or on a regimental basis for exercises or training?
No, because I don't think the ground didn't lead to tank training, because we were up a junior, I think, which was above Trieste. And I don't think the ground lent itself to any big training.
Mm.
And so I think involved in that, the only thing I was used for, as I say, I had to escort the general around all the borders. And so it was a matter of arranging that one car would go through the village, another one would stay in the village, and another one would come up behind with a general in between in his vehicle, which would be a staff car. I had I had a scout car, a Humber.
A Humber scout car?
Yeah, well, it was fitted up, it had a siren on it, it had the seats were taken out, and a type of settee. Type chair was fitted so the general could sit in it in comfort. That was really
a luxury armoured car.
But it had the protection.
Yeah.
And he would come along in that, and I would have to arrange for him to
keep leapfrogging your cars.
Leapfrogging the cars so that he was always protected. Our guns were always loaded because we were expecting that he could be attacked. So it was that type of situation at the time, I think, with the Serbs. And so he went all the way around, and we're delivering back to the Miramare Castle in Trieste in the evening.
How often did he go out on these trips?
Oh, I should say at least once a week to every 10 days. So I mean, he'd go not the same place, but different places. So it was. I was kept pretty busy, and of course that was good training for the soldiers as well. And of course when we'd come back, we'd have to sort of do all the maintenance and come clean, though we never had to shoot.
Did you ever see any signs of trouble or hostility on your way around on these journeys with the general?
Not really, no, but some of the country we were going over, you see, we'd be, in some cases, we'd have a track to go along at a certain height and it turned back on itself and go along below us, you see, so you had to sort of ensure that you were covered from both ways when you were doing these things.
Doing these sort of hairpin bends,
right.
Yeah.
So it was it's quite testing and enjoyable because, you know, you were sort of working out all sorts of problems that could happen and how you could cope with them in your own mind as you were going. You couldn't plan it before because you hadn't been there before. You had to sort of look at the ground and say, well, look, this looks as we used to in Italy. You'd look at the ground and say, well, this looks a bit dicey. Something could happen here or that. And so you were preparing yourself for it. Because we were in touch with the radio all the time.
Mm. Would that be in touch with the general's headquarters or
no.
with the regiment? Or with just with yourselves,
yes,
within the troop?
That's right, yes.
You're saying that once you were called out to make a show of force, what happened on that occasion?
Well, apparently the word came through that there was sort of a bit of trouble in Gorizia and some hand grenades had been found. So that was in the dark.
Mm.
And so they said, right, get up to up there and just drive around. So you sort of drive around, sort of get round the square and so they could see you. But they never, we had never had any problems with them.
Mm.
Well, occasionally there was also trouble with the strikers at Montarconi, the shipyard. And I remember once there was quite a big, because the regiment then moved to Montarconi from Officina. And we had to deal with the strikers. The regiment was called out in a peacekeeping role and form a line to stop the strikers coming up.
Were the soldiers carrying their weapons?
No, they had a truncheon issued and a shield.
Riot shield?
Yeah.
Had you done riot training before this happened?
Not really. No, it was just a place to get out there. And I think probably there was a backup to us. But they sort of got as far as us and turned back. They didn't ever really attack us.
Didn't try and push through you?
No.
How close did they get before they turned back?
Within 5 or 6 hours. Quite close up. Yeah. But there was no actual attack made.
No stoning?
No. It's, the dockyards were striking for something rather, and I don't know exactly what it was all about. But, we were called out as a regiment to do something about it. They hadn't got to the stage where a riot is known today with petrol bombs or stones or anything else. Fairly tame, really.
Did they look really angry and fed up when they approached you, this crowd of strikers, or...?
Well, I don't think they were, really. I mean, the typical Italian... of course, we'd seen these people about the town well before this, and they were always very friendly and happy. They'd go along and do people singing. They weren't the sort of people who one would be afraid of. Something quite different, really, to what we've been used to. Yeah. And we had a very good mess there. And then, unfortunately, the regiment, the 14th Hours, had orders to reduce to cadre strength. I don't know, it was a case that they were cutting down or whatever, but the regiment had come down to a cadre strength and they were going to leave Montalcone, where they were going from there, but that was the plan. Mm. So there was all of us, or there were so many officers and men who had to leave.
You were surplus then if they were going to cut the strength.
I think, I don't know what the cadre strength was, but I know it was quite a big reduction. And then they were going back to England, and whether they were going to form as a training regiment or what, I don't know. But,
seems rather ironic that you were diverted to them because they needed officers, and then so many months afterwards you were suddenly no longer required.
Yeah. 12 months or something, I think.
So you were with them for about a year?
Something like that, yes. Which was a shame, really, because they were a very good regiment. I know we had tremendous number of horses in the stables, and I remember one day we were up in, we'd moved, I think, had we moved out of Montfalcone somewhere, but we were set up with in tents, and all the officers' lines were in one, and we had a good cookhouse and the stables nearby, and all the men were sort of about 300 yards, all in tents and whatnot. And one afternoon, I could see one of these spiral, like the mini tornado coming towards us. And you could see it from a long way off, spinning, just one black cloud.
A twister.
Twister, that's right. Mm-hmm. And that was coming, and I dashed into my tent. I got all my gear, threw it on the bed, on my bed, and laid on it. And this thing came through. It lifted the tent, it lifted pine trees, went right through the mess, took the tin roof off the mess, and then you could watch it going away up in the tin, ripping up the telegraph poles and whatnot. And I thought I was very fortunate there then, that it came right through. And of course, it went, all the men were laughing their heads off because it didn't touch their lines.
Just the officer's line. Yes.
Everyone thought, well, it's a great thing, but it was a very clear when you see this. And then you could then see it disappear up in the mountains. Interesting way.
When, what were your relations with the locals like? Did you have much contact with the civil population?
Not really, hello and that sort of thing, but they were all very friendly. They seemed quite happy. They'd go, you'd see them walking down the street arm in arm, sort of singing. And, as I always imagine Italian people to be.
Did you see anything of the Yugoslav army?
No, no. Didn't see anything.
No contact with them?
No.
Did you ever think at any time that you might have to fight the Yugoslavs?
No,
was there, right?
No, no. We only knew there was trouble on the border, but we didn't associate it, having sort of fought with them. I don't think my mind saw, not the politicians might have thought so, but certainly the general sort of soldiers didn't think that would, anything like that would happen anyway. And I was there, so there was a leave centre at Villac, which was over the hills from Trieste. Some of the soldiers used to go back for the leave. But I didn't have any of that. And eventually, as I say, when it was brought down to Carter Strength, so many of us were sort of sent all over the place. Dick Hobson, who was a 12th officer, he was at divisional headquarters, and he suggested that I went to DHQ and took over as camp commandant, because the 10th Hussar, George Ridley, I think his name was camp commandant, and he was leaving. So there was a vacancy if I'd like to take it, see. And that was a captain's job.
It would be a staff job too, wouldn't it?
Well, no, it's not on the... Well, it is with the division headquarters, but it's not as a staff officer, really. It's camp commandant. It's really that you look after all the quartermaster-type things in the divisional headquarters. You know, and I wasn't a quartermaster as such, I didn't have a lot of experience, that was only common sense, really. And so I took the job, and it was quite interesting. And
How big was the staff then? How big was the headquarters?
The divisional headquarters?
Yes, because you would have been responsible for all the domestic side of their lives.
Well, it was much the same as you had all your different... departments. You'd have a 50, 60 men in that part of, I'm not talking about departments like the A branch, the G branch, and that sort of thing, but the part that you had all your transport people and, you know, so 60 odd people, I imagine.
Mm. Signals, presumably. You'd have a large body of signalers, presumably,
that's
to
right,
deal
yeah.
with.
But there was also an OC of HQ side
as
the headquarters. You see, so he would be looking after the men, normal, like a commanding officer of an HQ squadron.
Mm.
You see, and I would only be looking after the interests of welfare. Food, petrol, transport, all that sort of thing would come under me.
In a way, this sounds rather similar to some of the things you've been doing when you were Squadron Sergeant Major in the desert.
Much the same. But a lot of them come naturally.
Mm.
And most of it was just common sense.
Mm.
The only thing would be different would probably be the paperwork that a quartermaster would know about, which I didn't know about. Well, that was sort of thing that I would learn about. Like, I'd be responsible for the whole of the G1098 stuff and all that. But I didn't know at the time. It was just a matter of getting in there and feeling my way and learning about it.
Well, presumably you had storemen and quartermaster staff to
we had
advise you.
A staff sergeant who really has come along in that way, and he knows most of the stuff. You can be guided by them, and you have to be guided by them. So it's, but it was quite a challenge and sort of thing that I could do fairly easily. I didn't lose much sleep about it anyway.
But did you have to work more or less hard than when you've been a troop commander?
No, it was a different type of job, really. Although you had more people who would sort of blame you if anything went wrong, you see, but you are answerable really to all the staff of the HQ.
But I mean, did you have sort of regular, fairly regular office hours in that job?
Yes. But you sort of worked in that you were there, so when the headquarters staff was there.
And how big overall was the headquarters? How many people were there altogether in Div HQ, as far as you can tell?
Probably, actually 150.
Mm.
Might have been a bit more. But you had all the same, you had the general with all his staff.
Yes.
The chief of staff and his, and then you had the A branch.
Q branch.
Q branch, G branch.
Yep.
And all that support, you see, which was slightly separate from us. We were headquarters squadron with all the sort of transport side, all the crew side, the cooks, that sort of business.
Were you still involved in rationing when you were?
Yes, rationing came into it.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you were saying earlier on that when you'd been messing officer in the regiment.
Mm-hmm.
Did that help you when you got
not
to...
Not really, because messing in the regiment was just that your ration would arrive.
Yes.
The quartermaster would be responsible for making sure the rations came. A messing officer, he looks after making sure the menu was arrived. You still had to stick to your rations. You couldn't alter them because they were the set rations that would come up.
Yeah.
All you would have to make sure, in conjunction with your cook sergeant, that the rations were made into something which was
acceptable,
and the troops would enjoy.
Mm.
And you were then given a certain amount of money where you could, say, buy extra eggs or go on the market, buy fruit or that sort of thing. Not a lot of money, but enough just to give a little bit of a boost. And that's all the messing officer did. He had no control of what was coming in or anything. He didn't really know.
What was the availability like? Could you find most of the extra things you wanted to buy in that area at that time?
Well, Monfalcone was, and town, you couldn't buy a great deal, and the money wouldn't allow you to buy.
Mm.
You see, you could buy probably a few extra eggs, you could buy probably jams, different sort of fruit, just veg, and that sort of thing would come up with the rations. Mm. There's any little extra bit that the cook could make something special with. I mean, you could buy more jam, you can make jam tarts.
Mm.
Yeah, that's the thing really. But it was mainly up to the cook sergeant to make the most out of
What about specifically Italian things like local cheeses or salami or things like that? Was there any interest in that?
You could buy salami and stuff like that, but cheeses, no. Because that would have taken too much money and it wouldn't have suited everybody. You had to get something which would sort of everyone would probably enjoy.
Yeah.
Like you could buy peaches and stuff like that, which you could then put on for people. But there wasn't a lot of money involved, but just a little bit, just to make it...
With a variety.
That's right.
What about the wine and...
No, we never used to buy that one.
Mm.
No, that didn't come in. It's just basically the food.
Mm.
And again, it was up to the cook sergeant, really, to make his menu to...
Make it take advantage.
That's right, but if he sort of put on a couple of... miserable meals, and all the officer went round and said, "What's the food like?" And you get one chap who say, "Oh, it's rubbish, you know, we've got this, that, and the other." And of course, then that would go to the commanding officer, who would then say, "Well, there was a complaint." And then if he had another complaint the next day, "What's gone wrong? Why?" And of course, it's the mess officer who has to tell the colonel, whereas really, it is the cook sergeant who has the food and he knows what to do with it. The mess officer didn't know anything about cooking, I didn't know anything about cooking. Yeah, it was just a matter to be guided by him, and there's nothing really you could do about it.
Mm. What was the division headquarters actually doing when you joined them? Were they just sitting quietly in Trieste or
yes,
what?
Mm. They were in Trieste. I think that's where they finished up at the end of the war. Up the road was General Harding's headquarters on the castle. I can't remember what it's called now. And the division was down at Trieste in Rimari Castle. And I suppose they had a brigade, they had a brigadier there. I suppose they had the brigade sort of spread all around, but actually what that task was, I don't know. You know, it wasn't a thing that I sort of made a point of finding out. We certainly weren't told. But I think they had, the Queen's Bays were at the other side of Montfalcone, what it's called now. An old town that looks like a star when you look on the map. A few miles out of Montfalcone, I think the Queen's Bays were there. And all the cavalry regiments were around in their tanks. So there was certainly a brigade in that area. What their task was, I don't know. They were just probably there as a...
Just a force in being.
That's right.
Mm.
But I don't know if they had any particular task. Mm. And then they moved to... from Trieste, they moved out towards near... not far from Venice. About 10 miles from Venice, and that was a small town, and Div HQ moved there, and we had a nice officer's mess. And things sort of just went along. There was nothing exciting happening now at all, really.
Well, by now you're getting towards the end of 1946, beginning of 47.
Well,
things were beginning to happen at a political level. The Cold War was really beginning to.
Yeah.
Did you detect any signs of that?
No, but we were given orders that we were moving to Palestine. So I think I went out on the advance party. And we went, first of all, to